You're listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the October 2023 issue of Vanity Fair magazine. This is Vanity Fair, Part A. Here's this month's cover story, Bad Bunnies, Year of Rest and Relaxation by Michelle Ruiz, with photographs by Sylvester Macco, styled by Nicole Chapoteau. Opening photo, Year of the Bunny, Benito Antonio Martinez Ocasio, photographed in Puerto Rico in July. It's 10 minutes past noon in the historic San Juan neighborhood of Miramar, and Benito Antonio Martinez Ocasio is hiding just out of sight in a coral-colored speakeasy behind a ghost kitchen on a street that snakes to the beach. The chameleonic reggaeton supernova known as Bad Bunny is sitting at a corner table before an ever-growing feast of garlic knots and meatballs and two untouched pizzas, one pepperoni, one Hawaiian. For once, he's doing nada, the 29-year-old tells me in his blithe baritone. It's been my quietest day with nothing to do. This latest trip home came on a whim. Summer came, a couple of great reggaeton songs came out, and I said, I'm off, I'm going to Puerto Rico, like a vagabond. Martinez had declared a year of rest after cementing himself as one of the most thrillingly prolific artists working today, a powerhouse whose superlatives include a Grammy Album of the Year nomination, more Spotify streams in 2022 than Beyoncé or Taylor, and the launch of the highest-grossing tour ever by a Latin artist, El Último Tour del Mundo, in support of two of the three albums he'd released in 2020 while the rest of us were dabbling in tie-dye. After the final stop, Martinez dropped another album, the culture-cracking critical obsession Un Verano Sin Ti, a sex-drenched beach party with a streak of political resistance. Then he embarked on a second 2022 tour, the world's hottest, shattering Ed Sheeran's record for highest grossing, though Taylor and Beyoncé may beat them both this year. Then he headlined Coachella, the first Latin artist ever. Somewhere in all this, there's Kendall Jenner. And now an album this fall, about which Martinez, a master of surprise reveals, is insistently coy, as is his publicist. Said album is the subtext of our interview, but the performer, who's been more likely to midnight release on Thanksgiving or plant curiosity seeds via a fake Bugatti ad, is still reticent about confirming its existence. When I congratulate him on the forthcoming record, he deadpans, "Who told you that?" In Puerto Rico and Los Angeles, he's been experimenting with a new musical mood. I am playing around and enjoying myself, letting go. I'm being inspired by a lot by the music of the 70s, across genres in both Spanish and English, but I'm not sure if this is going to shape my music, generally, or just one song. One thing he promises, it's impossible that the album that comes after Un Verano Sin Ti will sound like it. Never, ever. I am always going to look for a way to do something new. And yet, he says he knew Un Verano Sin Ti would be his biggest album yet. How did you know? I ask. Because I know everything, is his arch reply. Bad Bunny's fifth studio release has the potential to be his most personal. Now, more than ever, he says, I feel more confident in talking about what I think, what I feel, and how I am living through my music. On this tropically humid Monday in July, however, it is still his so-called year of relaxation. I've eaten about 70 croquetas, he tells me in Spanish, as still more plates arrive. He's been wearing the same outfit every day for days, a striped polo, moisture-wicking shorts, and squishy slides, all in buttery shades of beige. His thicket of curls is topped with a backward snapback. He has piano fingers, a cropped circle beard, and pristine teeth. The only stealth hints at his global superstardom, other than the fact that my cab driver just declared his fealty, are a few diamonds here and there, including on the face of what looks like a women's Chanel watch on his wrist. His trademark septum piercing is conspicuously missing. He wanted to change it up, he said, to be more relaxed. He hasn't even been working out lately. It is too much, and your mental health can be impacted, Martinez says when I ask about his well-being. There are days where I feel strong and powerful, but from time to time, he says, I feel vulnerable. There are days when I feel like I can't handle my own life. You know what I mean? Before Bad Bunny was Bad Bunny, he was actually a very good bunny. Choir boy in the Catholic Church, where his mother, Lesore Ocasio, served as a devout congregant. I learned that I was the best in the choir, and I worked the hardest, he says, laughing, though he's not kidding. Church was hot and boring, but it affirmed his passion for music at a foundational age. Though he's popularly known for spitting staccato beats, listen closely, and his discography reveals an expansive, confident range. Even the seemingly offhand A's that punctuate his songs are filled with pathos. Martinez was an imaginative child. The son of Ocasio, a teacher, and Tito Martinez, a truck driver, Benito Antonio eschewed sports, preferring to play wrestle with action figures. His little brothers, Bernie and Bissell, hatched storylines for each toy. I am a person who always liked to live in my own world, he says. Lucha Libre captivated all three boys, perhaps explaining why, even now, Martinez does not consider himself too prestigious to moonlight as a WWE star. Appearing to slam a guitar into Mike the Miz Mizanin at WrestleMania. I liked everything. The creativity, the characters, the fact that each wrestler has his own entrance song, like a soundtrack that identifies you, Martinez explains. The clothes, too. Those neon briefs and bedazzled belts laid the groundwork for Bad Bunny's eventual ascent of the Met Gala, steps in a Burberry boiler dress, or in backless jacquemus, his white rosette cape scraping the carpet. Martinez never quite blended. Benito was the class clown, says Omar Davila, his personal photographer and friend since age 11. He was always a smart kid, too, super funny and outspoken. Influenced by his mother's penchant for pop, his father's traditional taste for salsa and merengue, and his personal pull to Latin trap, in 2016, he began uploading his own songs to SoundCloud. He anointed himself Bad Bunny after an infamous among his family Easter photo. What happened next is legend. While enrolled at the University of Puerto Rico at Arecibo, where he studied communications and bagged groceries at Econo on the side, one of his songs, Diles, Tell Them, a braggadocious track about his sexual prowess with a reverent nod to female pleasure, caught fire. His origin story carries a hint of the divine, though Martinez doesn't attend Mass anymore. God is everywhere, he told me, so why do I need to go to church? He landed his first record deal. When Martinez was growing up, traveling to the capital, San Juan, from his hometown, almost 30 miles east, was a special occasion. He first left when he was 17, and he says it was like crossing a frontier. By 2018, a baby-faced Bad Bunny was rendezvousing with Cardi B and J Balvin on I Like It, which hit number one in America. He rapped 99% in Español, a choice that would become more potent with time. Martinez has built his solo career on the idea that Latin music is limitless. He pays homage to mambo, merengue, bomba, and bachata, while creating provocative mixes with punk, grunge, EDM, and dembow. His 2018 debut album, X100 Prey, a stylized expression of Por Siempre, Forever, featured both Ricky Martin and Drake. His mounting success sent the essential message that crossing over should not demand the compromise of his native Spanish, specifically in his consonant-cutting Puerto Rican dialect. His 2020 El Último Tour del Mundo became the first Spanish-speaking album ever to reach number one on the Billboard Global Chart, a feat he repeated with the ubiquitous Un Verano Sin Ti. The concept of the crossover, whether by switching to English or otherwise making oneself more palatably, more stereotypically Latino, is dead now, Martinez says. He points to the chart success of Titi Me Pregunto, a bop about his global roster of girlfriends. He's been called the first reverse crossover artist, an invitation to non-Spanish speakers to understand his songs, if not his lyrics. There were English songs that I didn't know what the hell they were saying, he posits, but it didn't preclude him from becoming, for example, an ardent Ariana Grande fan. Martinez is a little young to remember Martin's energetic bongo-beating The Cup of Life performance at the 1999 Grammys, widely credited as the catalyst for the Latin explosion, though he nods in recognition when I mention it. Bad Bunny opened this year's Grammys with a modern compliment, forming a medley of El Apagón, The Blackout, a searing anthem about Puerto Rican corruption and resilience, and Después de la Playa, a magnetic merengue dance party, all in Spanish. With the gravitas of a jazz-age bandleader, Bad Bunny transported Puerto Rico's San Sebastián Street Festival to Los Angeles' Crypto.com arena, bobbing cabezudos, customary papier-mâché heads included. Taylor Swift shimmied, Jack Harlow clapped his gloved hands. Benito brings an energy that is just contagious, says Davila. He made the crowd feel like they are there with him, not for him. It was supposed to be a mid-show performance, according to Martinez, until producers caught his rehearsal and bumped him to the opener. Watching it compelled me to dance from my couch, but also filled me with a kind of misty awe. This triumphant statement of Latin joy and pride in what has been a darkly oppressive era. It was a special moment for me as well, Martinez nods. But the Grammys botched the handling of his language. Instead of translating the performance, closed captions simply read singing in non-English, instantly inspiring a viral meme. It was so effed up. Martinez emphasizes that he didn't even realize what had happened at first. It's ugly to say that I saw it as normal. Then it was like, wow, wait a minute, what the hell? Why don't they have someone, knowing that I was going to be there? And then dismissing it altogether, he says, I sing for those who want to listen to me and those who understand me. When Verano Sin Ti made history as the first Spanish-language album nominated for Album of the Year, but Grammy voters passed over Bad Bunny and Beyoncé's heavily favored Renaissance with a controversial upset by Harry Styles' Harry's House. Martinez claims relief that it spared him an ego trip. It wasn't because I didn't feel I was deserving or because I thought I couldn't win. It was because I don't really want to hear myself, he said. I know I was going to get emotional. It would have been powerful and hard dealing with that pride. Instead, Bad Bunny won Best Musica Urbana Album and Beyoncé took home R&B honors, fueling ongoing criticism that the National Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences consistently fails to endow its most hallowed honor on diverse artists, instead relegating them to niche categories. Maybe they weren't ready for a Spanish-language album to win the big prize, Martinez says when I raise the criticism. I didn't even feel like Album of the Year had been stolen from me until the media started saying it, and I saw that everybody thought I deserved the prize, and everybody thought it was a robbery. That's when they kind of convinced me, and I said, well, yes, it was a robbery then. Not that he holds it against the victor. Fans on TikTok spotted Martinez at a Styles concert in L.A. How was it? I ask. Brutal. Martinez instantly replies in Spanish, killer. Martinez isn't fluent in English, but he's working on it by speaking. We spoke to each other in Spanish and English. Someday, with the right song or collaborator, he'll sing in English, he says. But I am never going to do it just because someone says I need to do it to reach a certain audience. He references the Japanese lines at the end of his poppy reggaeton track Yonaguni, named for the Japanese island. I was told that I had to sing in Japanese to reach the audience, he recalled. I almost didn't do it because of that. Where She Goes, his characteristically naughty Jersey Club track, speculated to be about Jenner, had sparked chatter that an English song was forthcoming. He can sense it's become a thing. It's not like I hate the idea of performing in English, he says. It's just that I feel more comfortable in my own language. I think in Spanish, I feel in Spanish, I eat in Spanish, I sing in Spanish. Already, with some people I speak English. With some specific people, Martinez muttered. With one of them, I couldn't talk to her before. Horndoggery is a hallmark of the Bad Bunny brand. His lyrics are thick with sex, from analingus to roadhead, and partners so wet he could baptize himself. He must be the only ASCAP Songwriter of the Year honoree to trumpet, I love the P of Puerto Rico. His young fans like him impressionistically graphic, even if their abuelas don't. Talk to me honestly, he says to me, adopting their perspective. Don't hide reality behind a disguise. Yet Martinez eschews stereotypical Latino machismo, and not just because he sports rainbow glitter manicures and couture skirts. His music is hypersexual and uber-specific, but not degrading. He's filthy, sure, but he's sensuous, rehashing his hookups with an almost holy worship. Sex is one of the most beautiful and deepest things in the world, Martinez says, twisting off a garlic knot from a bed of creamed spinach. He and his publicist, Sujeli Sola, laugh because, despite its prevalence in his songbook, he isn't often asked about this topic. Maybe I'm thinking about sex a lot during my free time. I have a lot of free time. He's been spending at least some of it with Jenner, a Dermois blonde that actually checked out. The single famous model sister was seen playing tonsil hockey with Bad Bunny at a private L.A. club last night, read a thinly veiled Anon tip in February. Since then, Jenner and Martinez have embarked on a series of splashy dates, emerging in head-to-toe black leather from Giorgio Baldi, snapping selfies in prom pose while riding the same horse, perusing vinyls at a Sherman Oaks record store, and canoodling at a Drake concert. He arrived at our cover shoot in Puerto Rico wearing a choker dangling with a dainty K charm, which TikTokers believe belongs to Jenner. Sola asked him to take it off before being photographed. Some believe his line on Eladio Carrion's Coco Chanel contains an allusion to Jenner. The sun in PR is hotter than in Phoenix. An alleged diss on Jenner's ex Devin Booker, a guard for the Phoenix Suns. But the romance instantly drew ire from Bad Bunny's legion of fans, who are nothing if not devoted. She's a Kardashian, proximally, if not nominally, and Martinez is the antithesis of a Nepo baby. More cuttingly, though, fans have framed the relationship as a form of cultural betrayal, that Martinez, who has held fast to his language and Puerto Ricanness throughout his ascent, would date a non-Latina. When I ask Martinez if the backlash went too far, he deflects, still not confirming or denying Jenner is his girlfriend, instead saying nobody, famous or not, is free from the insidiousness of shit talk. Bad Bunny's extremely online fandom bleeds for him, not unlike the Beehive, Swifties, or Little Monsters. They giveth streams, ticket sales, and round-the-clock parasocial adoration, and they feel equally free to rain criticism online. Martinez accepts that he's beloved. There are days when he lets himself be hugged, but he doesn't take a particularly sunny or even diplomatic approach to the prospect of fans exerting control over his life. When one of his acolytes thrust a phone in his face during a rare vacation over the holidays, he hurled it into a bush. They don't know how you feel. They don't know how you live. They don't know anything. And I really don't want them to know, Martinez says. Solá had warned me before our interview not to probe about his relationship, and he makes it clear he does not want to speak on his private life. I'm not really interested in clarifying anything, because I have no commitment to clarify anything to anyone. I am clear, and my friend Jomar, he points across the table to Davila, is clear, and my mother is clear. They are the only ones to whom I have to clarify anything. As for Juliana Dominguez from Mississippi, a random fan's name, I'm pretty sure, I have nothing I need to clarify to her, never, about anything. There are people who say that artists have to put up with it, he adds. I don't have to accept anything and everything because I wanted to be an artist. At the end of the day, you listen to me because you want to. I don't force you to. Privacy is prickly for Bad Bunny, but Davila notes that people don't realize just how much Benito thinks about his fans. Everything he does in the studio is for him, but everything he does with what comes out of that studio, impromptu albums and song drops, back-to-back blockbuster tours, is for his fans. Dating Jenner was a crossover event, but ever-present paparazzi are only one component of the scrutiny. It used to be a guy with a camera and a flash, and they F with your eyes, like that. Nowadays, everybody is a paparazzo, Martinez says. Everybody is taking photos. Everyone is recording. It's shadowy phone videos purported to be of Martinez and Jenner swaying together at a Frank Ocean show. TikToks depicting her walking ahead of him at a Lakers game. A few days after we meet, a fan video shows them out to dinner in Puerto Rico. Nobody respects anybody's privacy, he says, and not only my privacy as a celebrity, but yours. Are you famous? Is Michelle famous? Not yet, I joke. Michelle is not famous, and people don't respect your privacy, he continues, because if right now you go out there and your pants are ripped and you can see a butt cheek or a pigeon shits on you, there's a bastard who will film you and take a picture of you. Being with Jenner is Martinez's first suspected celebrity romance. In the past, he dated his UPR classmate, Carlis de la Cruz Hernandez, who is now suing him for $40 million for use of her voice in the Jason Derulo-esque It's Bad Bunny Baby intros on two songs. From 2017 until sometime last year, Martinez was in a relationship with Puerto Rican jewelry designer Gabriela Berengueli. Gabriela Berengueli, with whom he documented their pandemic isolation in Puerto Rico in one since-deleted video, she and Martinez in drag for his Yo Pierio Sola, I Twerk Alone video, passionately make out. Berengueli also served as a collaborator, lending vocals to En Casita, a forlorn track from Bad Bunny's surprise quarantine album, and cameoing as his bride at the end of the Titi Me Pregunto video. How Berengueli ended and when Jenner began remains private. Never clocking a breakup with Berengueli, the initial Der Moi post about Jenner speculated that Berengueli and Martinez might have an open relationship. When I ask about that rumor, Martinez laughs heartily before Solá shuts down any comment. Fans spotted Berengueli in the VIP area for his Coachella performance in April this year, suggesting amicability. A bandana mask Martinez and Jenner were also spotted at the festival. He since deleted all of those quarantine posts and drastically scaled back his Instagram activity. Martinez isn't in a headspace to engage with the comments. Then there's the cringe factor. It's a bitch, social media. You put it out there and it's forever. Like, man, in the future, maybe you won't feel the way you felt that day. And you'll see the photo and say, hell, why did I post that? Lately, Martinez has been spending most of his time in Los Angeles, but lest anyone think he'll go full Hollywood, he issues a few caveats. It's only been 7 months since he and his team, decided to relocate, temporarily, in order to get a breath of fresh air. He does not see himself in L.A. forever. Impossible. He has said he considers himself a jibaro, slang for something approximating a country boy. Still, he's not above the city's sparkly mythology. He dreamed of L.A. since he was a kid who lionized Kobe Bryant and the Lakers. Now he sits courtside and coordinating snakeskin boots with Jenner. Like Beyonce and J-Lo and Elvis before him, Martinez is exploring the well-blazed path to hyphenated actor. You could say that I have been investing a little bit more of myself in acting, he says noncommittally. In the midst of 2022, he howled at the moon and body-slammed Brad Pitt as a machete-wielding Mexican assassin in Bullet Train. He's credited not as Bad Bunny, but as Benito A. Martinez. He's already shared his first on-screen kiss with Gael Garcia Bernal in the biopic Casandro about 80s-era gay wrestler Saul Armendariz, which premiered at the Sundance Film Festival earlier this year and is slated for a Prime Video release. Garcia Bernal plays the title role in Martinez, his lover, and he guest starred on Narcos, Mexico, as a junior gang member, a part for which he humbly submitted an audition tape. The WWE pedigree seemed suited to his casting in the title role of Marvel's El Muerto, a Spider-Man spinoff about a luchador whose mask imbues him with superhuman strength. But after languishing in production limbo, the studio pulled the project from its release calendar, crushing Martinez's dream role. When I ask him what happened, he hesitates. An awkward silence ripples across the table. Next question, asserts Sola, who's seated in an adjacent booth. I don't know what to say, Martinez replies, calling the issue delicate. Sola sharpens the point. Obviously, it's out, she says of the film. The next project he chooses could prove as unexpected as his mid-song transitions. As a movie consumer myself, I'm not one to watch a lot of action movies. I'd even say it's my least favorite genre, Martinez tells me. I would really like to play other kinds of things, like a little bit more drama, romance too, or comedy. Maybe a history movie with a little action in it. Citing the steamy alchemy between Bad Bunny and Rosalia in the video and Saturday Night Live musical guest performance for the morning after duet La Noche de Anoche, I suggest an erotic thriller, the vaunted 90s subgenre that gave us Silver and Body of Evidence. He smiles gamely. I think you're right. Bad Bunny is already a subject of academic study. A graduate seminar at San Diego State University School of Journalism and Media Studies examines his socio-political impact on Latinx culture. At Wellesley College, he's a 300-level American Studies class. Bad Bunny, race, gender, and empire in reggaeton. Martinez is ripe for analysis as an artist born of a perilous political moment. His stratospheric rise coincided with Hurricane Irma's and Maria's devastation of Puerto Rico and the Trump administration's woefully inadequate response. The president pelting paper towels on a supposed aid visit highlighted a lingering stench of colonialism in the U.S. Commonwealth, a place where America too often overlooks or outright forgets its own citizens. Bad Bunny broke through at a time when Puerto Rico needed a hero. When you put it that way, it sounds nice, he demurs. I think that's what music and artists are there for, to save lives. Not in a way that announces I am going to save a life, but instead in a way that in difficult times, the music is there to take your mind off of the trouble and to provide strength. Though he says he never set out to be a hero, he nevertheless became a member of the island's Ricky Renuncia resistance movement, demanding the resignation of corrupt ex-governor Ricardo Rosello. First, Bad Bunny and Residente, one of his reggaeton idols, paid Rosello a surprise 2 a.m. visit at La Fortaleza, the governor's residence, where they were eventually admitted for a chat with the embattled leader. A few months later, Bad Bunny cut his tour short to jet to San Juan. In mirrored sunglasses and a black mask, he towered above a mass of protesters on the back of a flatbed truck with Martin and Residente, hoisting a Puerto Rican flag high. The system, for years, decades, has taught us to keep quiet, he wrote on Instagram. We need to hit the streets. Bad Bunny has repeatedly funneled his political discontent into song, from the impromptu Afilando los Cuchillos, Sharpening the Knives, a protest rap written and recorded in a single day with Residente and Eli, and Estamos Bien, We're Good, a post-hurricane rallying cry. More than 3,000 people have died, and Trump's still in denial, he decried before debuting it on The Tonight Show. El Apagón, the anthem to which Bad Bunny opened the Grammys, takes aim at the continued plague of power outages after the privatization of the Puerto Rican power grid, which was taken over by Luma Energy, the Canadian and Texan conglomerate, in 2021. F Luma, Bad Bunny declared in no uncertain terms at a San Juan concert earlier this year. This country belongs to us. Bad Bunny democratizes his performances at home, beaming them onto giant screens across the island, staging at least one free pop-up show atop a Gulf station. Puerto Rico brims with Bad Bunny mythology now, and I wonder about the burden of representation for this one man, not yet 30, eating his croquetas for lunch. What pressures does he feel to be a portavoz, a spokesperson? Martinez views his activism as a choice, not an artistic responsibility. What I do from my heart, he said. I do it as my duty, but my duty as a Puerto Rican, as a human being, not as an artist. I believe that every human being has the duty to have empathy for others, to help others, to respect them, to always try to contribute something to society, to bring a positive change. Politicians, he says, are the ones most obliged, but do the least. He does not want to be pigeonholed as an artist. I worry about those issues, but I also have my family, I have my partner, I have my nightlife. On Fridays, I want to go to the club. On Sundays, I want to go to the beach. That's life. He seems to know where his voice is most needed and how to use it. He condemned the murder of trans Puerto Rican woman Alexa Negron Luciano in 2020 with a T-shirt reading, "They killed Alexa, not a man in a skirt." He kissed a male backup dancer. He dressed in resplendent red leather swathed drag and prosthetic breast in support of the feminist dance track Yo Pareo Sola, which amid violence against women in Latin America advocated for a lady's right to shake her ass unbothered at the club. Bad Bunny's penchant for feminine fashion has sparked questions of queerbaiting, the ability of straight people to adopt traditionally queer styles and potentially wink at queer audiences without the retribution suffered by queer stars. Martinez concedes that his sartorial choices may be more accepted, and yet rejection is deeply felt, I get an endless number of negative comments and sexist and homophobic ones without being homosexual for dressing like that, he tells me. Maybe the queer person suffers more, but it is not like I put on a skirt and go out and they say, look how cool. They're going to attack me with all their force anyway. It's another delicate subject, he says. You don't know the reasons why a person is wearing that. You weren't in his mind when he decided to put on a skirt or a blouse. You don't know what's inside him, what's in his heart. When I ask Martinez if dressing femme reflects a part of his identity, he suggests it's not that deep. You do it because you want to, and it makes you feel good, and it makes you feel happy. Here at home, he can just be not Bad Bunny, but Benito Antonio, his mother's baby. The Martinez Ocasios don't live much differently than they always have, he said, even if he impulse bought a house in Dorado, a beachy enclave near Vega Baja, where he grew up. The area where all the rich people and the gringos and millionaires move. Martinez never stays there. It doesn't feel like home. People assume he lives in a 30-room mansion, but he's not interested in ostentatiousness. I've been looking for the perfect place in Puerto Rico to create my dream home for a long time, he says. He hasn't figured it out yet, but I hope to live here forever. Martinez suspects that his mom would like him to settle down eventually, complete a hallowed sacrament. She would love for me to get married in the church, he smirks. Next, I say from experience with my own Catholic family members, they'll want you to produce grandchildren. Does Martinez want those traditional milestones? No, I don't think so. Ever? Not ever, but not now. His year of rest and relaxation continues, though he recently featured on Taini's summery synth-infused track Mojave Ghost. K-pop, which he called a long-in-the-works collaboration with rapper Travis Scott, ex-partner of Jenner's sister Kylie, and The Weeknd, came out this summer. There's a lyric from this new song that's speculated to be about Kris Jenner. If your mom catches us, she'll ask me for a photo. And Martinez toys with a return to the WWE ring. My plan is to take the title from Roman Reigns, he taunts, before admitting he's trying to avoid Lucha Libre. His last match, in which he defeated fellow Puerto Rican fighter Damian Priest, was just too painful. When he'll tour again, he has no idea. Halfway through touring, he'd think, F it, I'm tired. But the same way you miss school after a long summer vacation, the desire always comes back. It used to be awkward, the shock waves of family members when he'd return home. Sometimes they say, hell, now he's this giant phenomenon, blah, 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 Martinez recalls. He settled on seeing his job like any other, comparing himself to a relative who went to work at a company on the mainland. When he comes on vacation to Puerto Rico, they ask him, how are you doing over there? The Last Descent. Though the world wouldn't catch on until disaster struck, a tight-knit community of seafarers, explorers, and bold submariners worried for years that Stockton Rush's Ocean Gate implosion was all but guaranteed. Susan Casey, author of The Underworld, reveals the hardest truths about the Titan. Opening photo shows the Titan underwater. 41, 73 degrees north, 49, 95 degrees west, North Atlantic Ocean, June 18th, 2023. Fate cleared up the weather, blew off the fog, and calmed the waves as the submersible and its five passengers dived through the surface waters and fell into another world. They entered the deep ocean's uppermost layer, known as the Twilight Zone, passing creatures glimmering with bioluminescence, tiny fish with enormous teeth. Then they entered the Midnight Zone, where larger creatures ghost by like alien moons. 2 miles down, they entered the Abyssal Zone, so named because it's the literal abyss. Deeper means heavier. Pressures of 5,000... then 6,000 pounds per square inch. As it descended, the submersible was gripped in a tightening vise. Maybe they heard a noise then. Maybe they heard an alarm. I hope they watched the abyss with awe through their viewport, because I'd like to think their last sights were magnificent ones. As the world now knows, Stockton Rush touted himself as a maverick, a disruptor, a breaker of rules. So far out on the visionary curve that for him, safety regulations were mere suggestions. If you're not breaking things, you're not innovating, he declared at the 2022 GeekWire Summit. To me, the more stuff you've broken, the more innovative you've been. In a society that has adopted the ridiculous mantra, move fast and break things, that type of arrogance can get a person far. But in the deep ocean, the price of admission is humility, and it's non-negotiable. The abyss doesn't care if you went to Princeton, or that your ancestors signed the Declaration of Independence. If you want to go down into her world, she sets the rules. And her rules are strict, befitting the gravitas of the realm. To descend into the ocean's abyssal zone, the waters from 10,000 to 20,000 feet is a serious affair. And because of the annihilating pressures, far more challenging than rocketing into space. The subs that dive into this realm, there aren't many, are tested and tested and tested. Every component is checked for flaws in a pressure chamber and checked again. And every step of this process is certified by an independent marine classification society. This assurance of safety is known as classing a sub. Deep-sea submersibles are constructed of the strongest and most predictable materials as determined by the laws of physics. In the abyss, that means passengers typically sit inside a titanium pressure hull forged into a perfect sphere, the only shape that distributes pressure symmetrically. That means adding crush-resistant syntactic foam around the sphere for buoyancy and protection to offset the weight of the titanium. That means redundancy upon redundancy with no single point of failure. It means a safety plan, a rescue plan, and acute situational awareness at all times. It means respect for the forces in the deep ocean, which Rush didn't have. Unfortunately, June 18th, 2023, wasn't the first time I'd heard of Rush, or his company Oceangate, or his monstrosity of a sub. He and the Titan had been a topic of conversation talked about with real fear on many occasions by numerous people I met over the course of 5 years while reporting my book, The Underworld, Journeys to the Depths of the Ocean. I heard discussions about the Titan as a tragedy in waiting on research ships, during deep-sea expeditions, at marine science conferences. I had my own troubling encounter with Oceangate in 2018 and had been watching it with concern ever since. Everyone I met in the small, tight-knit world of manned submersibles was aware of the Titan. Everyone watched in disbelief as Rush built a 5-person cylindrical pressure hull out of filament-wound carbon fiber, an unpredictable material that is known to fail suddenly and catastrophically under pressure. It was as though we were watching a horror movie unfold in slow motion, knowing that whatever happened next wouldn't be pretty. But like screaming at the screen, nothing that came out of anyone's mouth made any difference. In December 2015, 2 years before the Titan was built, Rush had lowered a 1/3 scale model of his 4,000-meter sub-to-be into a pressure chamber and watched it implode at 4,000 PSI, a pressure equivalent to only 2,740 meters. The test's stated goal was to validate that the pressure vessel design is capable of withstanding an external pressure of 6,000 PSI, corresponding to a depth of about 4,200 meters. He might have changed course then, stood back, and reconsidered. Instead, Oceangate issued a press release stating that the test had been a resounding success because it demonstrates that the benefits of carbon fiber are real. Rush didn't even break stride. He ran right on ahead, plowing hard into his director of marine operations, David Lockridge. Lockridge had immigrated from Scotland to work for Oceangate, selling his home in Glasgow, moving to Washington State with his wife and daughter. Unlike many of his new colleagues, Lockridge was an established pro, a submersible and remote-operated vehicle pilot, a marine engineer, an underwater inspector for the oil and gas industry. He'd piloted rescue subs for the British Navy. By January 2018, the Titan was nearly completed, soon to begin its sea trials. But first, Lockridge would have to inspect the sub and pronounce it fit to dive. And that wasn't going to happen. Lockridge had been watching the sub's progress with ratcheting alarm. He'd argued with Oceangate's engineering director, Tony Nissen. Oceangate had responded by refusing to let Lockridge examine the work on the sub's oxygen system, computer systems, acrylic viewport, O-rings, and the critical interfaces between its carbon fiber hull and titanium end caps. Nissen did not respond to request for comment. When Lockridge voiced his concerns, he was ignored. So he inspected the Titan, as thoroughly as he could. Then he presented Rush with a 10-page quality control inspection report that listed the sub's problems. Verbal communication of the key items I have addressed in my attached document have been dismissed on several occasions, Lockridge wrote on the first page. So I feel now I must make this report so there is an official record in place. These issues, he added, were significant in nature and must be addressed. Next photos, Stockton Rush, who co-founded OceanGate, and OceanGate's Titan sub. Lockridge listed more than 24 items that required immediate attention. These included missing bolts and improperly secured batteries, components zip-tied to the outside of the sub. O-ring grooves were machined incorrectly, which could allow water ingress. Seals were loose. A highly flammable material lined the Titan's interior. Hosing looped around the sub's exterior, creating an entanglement risk, especially at a site like the Titanic, where spars, pipes, and wires protrude everywhere. Yet those deficiencies paled in comparison to what Lockridge observed on the hull. The carbon fiber filament was visibly coming apart, riddled with air gaps, delaminations, and holes, and there was no way to fix that short of tossing the hull in a dumpster. The manufacturing process for carbon fiber filament is exacting. Interwoven carbon fibers are wound through a cylinder and bonded with epoxy and cured in an oven for 7 days. The goal is perfect consistency. Any mistakes are baked in permanently. Given that the hull would be seeing such immense pressures not yet experienced on any known carbon-hulled vehicle, we run the risk of potential interlaminar fatigue due to pressure cycling, Lockridge wrote, especially if we do have imperfections in the hull itself. The hull would need to be scanned to reveal the extent of its flaws. Scanning the hull shouldn't be a problem, should it? Lockridge noted in another document that OceanGate had previously stated the hull would be scanned. Spoiler alert, the hull was not scanned. The OceanGate engineering team does not plan to obtain a hull scan and does not believe the same to be readily available or particularly effective in any event, the company's lawyer, Thomas Gilman, wrote in March 2018. Instead, OceanGate would rely on acoustic monitoring, sensors on the Titan's hull that would emit an alarm when the carbon fiber filaments were audibly breaking. Lockridge's report was concise and technical, compiled by someone who clearly knew what he was talking about. Rush's response was to fire Lockridge immediately, serve him and his wife with a lawsuit, although Carol Lockridge didn't work at OceanGate, for breach of contract, fraud, unjust enrichment, and misappropriation of trade secrets, threaten their immigration status, and seek to have them pay OceanGate's legal fees. According to the company, Lockridge had manufactured a reason to be fired. He had once mooned OceanGate staff through the large viewing window and had repeatedly refused to accept the veracity of information provided by the company's lead engineer and repeatedly stated he did not approve of OceanGate's research and development plans. Now unemployed, distressed by OceanGate's allegations, and beset with legal bills, Lockridge was in a vulnerable position. He countersued for wrongful termination and sent his inspection report to the U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Administration. OSHA, in turn, passed it to the Coast Guard. Lockridge had saved Rush from himself at least once before. In June 2016, Rush piloted OceanGate's shallow diving sub, the Cyclops 1, to the Andrea Doria, a hulking 700-foot ocean liner that had sunk in 1956 off Nantucket, in a patch of the Atlantic known for its murky fog and seething currents. The ship lies at 240 feet, cobwebbed with discarded fishing lines. At that depth, it is accessible to advanced scuba divers, 18 of whom have died there. Rush was headed down to capture sonar images of the shipwreck with Lockridge and three clients. This article will be continued in the next installment. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both Parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selection by Mark Hoffman.